for having me here. So this is based on work done with Graciela Gelmini and Paolo Gondolo at UCLA, and Paolo is at the University of Utah. So here's an outline. Well, she said she's going to hear me, but it's the audience will not. So the outline of my talk is the following. So I'm going to talk a little bit about the channeling effect in direct dark matter detection and what was the motivation of this effect and why we started to study it. And then the basic idea for a daily modulation due to channeling to exist. And then I'm going to show our calculation of the channeling fractions for incident particles into a crystal and recoiling nuclei, which is relevant for direct dark matter detectors. And finally, I'm going to show some estimates of the daily modulation amplitudes. And then we recently have noticed a few directional features which are relevant just for directional dark matter detectors. And I'm going to discuss that towards the end of my talk. So direct dark matter experiments look for the energy which is deposited in detectors by the scattering of WIMPs in dark matter in the dark halo of our galaxy, and we have many experiments going on. These are just a few examples, and there are three signals which can be measured: phonon, scintillation, or ionization. And data from three experiments are pointing to the region of light WIMPs. So one is the DAMA experiment using NAI crystals to measure the scintillation signal. We have the COGENT, which uses germanium and measures ionization. And finally, CREST, which recently had some data pointing towards the same mass region. And it uses CAW04, and it has scintillation plus phonons. So this is one of the recent CREST plots for the regions and the limits from different experiments. So here, the M2 is due to the scattering of the WIMPs by the, well, their signal for the oxygen and calcium. The M1 is by tungsten, which is more massive. And then you have the DAMA regions. So and then the COGENT region is in pink. The DAMA regions are the solid lines are just without considering any channeling, and the dashed lines are considering the channeling, which was first calculated by the DAMA in 2008. So you could see that channeling has a huge effect if we use the DAMA results for it, and it shifts this one on the low mass section is due to sodium recoils, and so I think I don't have, I'm just going to use this. So the dashed lines here is due to iodine with channeling, and so you could see that it shifts the original iodine without channeling to much lower masses. And so this was a really important effect that we thought that we should take a look into and try to see exactly how this is done. So this is another plot. This is by the Xenon collaboration, and they're not using channeling anymore because, as I'm going to show you in a second, we find that channeling is actually negligible. The effect of channeling in these limits is negligible. So in the new papers, usually they don't use it anymore. What is channeling? I'm going to go into that in a minute, but just in a very short sentence to say it, is that ions that move parallel to the crystal's axis or planes feel this effect, which would enhance the energy deposited to electrons. So channeling increases the ionization or scintillation signal. And the potential importance of channeling for direct dark matter detection was first pointed out by the DAMA collaboration and by Robyshevsky in 2007. And if you define the quenching factor as the ratio of the measured energy to the recoil energy, not all of the recoil energy is detected in general. But when the recoils move along a channel, their quenching factor would be 1 instead of lower than 1. For example, example, for NA, is about 0.3, and for I, 0.09, because they give their energy mostly to electrons. So all of the measured all of the recoil energy can be measured if we have channeling. So the Damo collaboration found that the fraction of these channeled recoils would be large for low recoil energies. So this is a plot that they presented for iodine and sodium. And this actually changes this large channeling fraction, changes this region of light WIMPs. So you could see this shift again, that it's shifted towards lighter WIMPs. And this is the effect of channeling with this large channelings of DAMA. So, and then there's this idea of daily modulation. So this was in 2008 that Kresvik, Nusinov, and Avignon had this idea that this channeling gives rise to a daily modulation of the signal, and that this daily modulation can be around 25%. So the idea is the following, that the wind comes preferentially from one direction because of the motion of the Earth with respect to the galaxy. And if that direction is aligned with a channel, the signal is larger, so quenching factor is 1 instead of less than 1. And the Earth's daily rotation makes the wind change direction with respect to the signal, with respect to the crystal. And this would produce a daily modulation in the measured recoil energy. So this is saying as if the quenching factor is being modulated. So it is less than 1, and you know, in some directions at some times of the day, and equal to 1 at other times of the day. And so if this daily modulation is measured, it would have no background, and it would be ideal for dark matter search, because we don't know of any known background that would exactly do the same thing. Our work is, we started with Graciela and Paolo more than 3 years ago to do an analytic calculation and use basic assumptions to estimate these amplitudes of daily modulation due to channeling. But during this work, we figured out that these channeling fractions of DAMA does not include a very important effect called blocking, which is temperature dependent. And it makes these channeling fractions much smaller at lower energies than evaluated by the DAMA collaboration. So they did this for different crystals, for NAI, silicon germanium, cesium iodine, which is used by the KIMS collaborations, solid xenon, argon, and neon. And finally, we gave some estimates for the daily modulation due to channeling. Going back to channeling, in a little bit deeper sense, so if you have an incident ion, and if it's along the symmetry axis or planes of a crystal, it would have a series of small angle scatterings which would maintain the ion inside what we call the open channels. And the ion would penetrate much further into the crystal compared to other directions. And the effect of blocking is that if you have an ion which is originating from the lattice site, and if it's going to be moving towards the symmetry axis or planes, there would be a reduction in the flux of the ion when it exits the crystal. And the reason is just, you know, all these lattice nuclei in front of the ion would give it a large angle scattering and would knock it out of the channel. So this is actually really important for our case, which is direct dark matter detection. So the crystals, sodium iodine and cesium iodine crystals are face-centered cubic. They have different pure or mixed rows and planes. So here, for example, this is a mixed row. This is a pure row and plane. So we had to, you know, incorporate all of these different lower index crystallography planes and axes in our computations. And for silicon and germanium, it's face-centered diamond. So the structure is a little bit different. The channeling effect in NAI has been observed for a long time. The first paper was in 1973. The observation, this has been experimentally observed, that when and when a chromatic oxygen beam is incident through a NAI scintillator, there's going to be two peaks. So this is the x-axis is just the scintillation response, and some peaks at the lower scintillation response are the peaks that for when we don't have channeling, and for higher scintillation response we have the peaks due to channeling. And the first plot is just random incidence, so there's no channeling. For the second one, we have 10 mega electron volts oxygen beam, and it's along one of the planes, and there is some channeling. And when we increase the energy, the channeling decreases.
Could I mm-hmm. quickly interrupt you and just can you give us maybe a pictorial picture of how this of how scintillation really works? I mean, because everything is related to the quenching factor here, right?
Right.
And so, could you just give us an intuitive picture why there is quenching at all, and what's really happening in converting energy into scintillation?
Right, because the measured and so because if you have just a crystal and there's no channeling, the ion which is going through, it's going to give their energy mainly to, so basically it's going to create phonons, it's going to give the energy to the lattice, so not all the recoil energy would be measured. In case that we have channeling, it's going to give most of its energy to electrons, so basically whatever recoil energy you have would be detected. Is that what? Yeah, and so, well, the scintillation signal that they measure is with these tallium. So in NAI, they have these tallium dopants that they measure the scintillation through them. Basically, the difference between having a quenching factor or not having a quenching factor is that the energy would go either into the lattice or it would go into mainly to electrons, which would go into the ionization or scintillation signal. Is that? Right.
So we should think of the channeled ions as not interacting much with the crystal structure.
Right. Exactly. Is that sort of? So there are a lot of different usage for these channeling and blocking in crystallography, studies of lattice disorders, ion implantation, trying to locate the dopant and impurity atoms, and different studies of crystals in general. Also, channeling is to be avoided in ion implantation in silicon to make good, to make circuits. And there are some data at hundreds of keV and some analytic models by Hobler, because most of the models of channeling is at higher energies and at MeV and higher. So there are very few models at low energies. So this was another difficulty of this work, finding models at low energies, which would be relevant to what we do. Our calculation is basically based on these classical analytic models. They were mostly developed in the 60s and the 70s. The main one is Linhart's model, and then we use a bunch of others. And these models were also used by the DAMA collaboration. So we did the same in that respect. So we used the continuum string or plane model. In this continuum string or plane, the screen Thomas Fermi potential is averaged over a direction parallel to the rho or plane, and it's basically saying that you could think of the atoms in the lattice as a continuum, just string or continuum plane. So you don't really look at the individual interactions and binary collisions between them. And that is when you're not too close to the lattice. If you get too close to the lattice, you're going to see individual interactions. So I'm going to get into that in a second. So this is an example of this continuum potential for as a function of distance from the rho or plane. So the black line is axial, and for an axial channel, one particular in silicon, and the green line is for a planar channel. So only one row or plane is considered. And in the direction perpendicular to the row or plane, what is called the transverse energy, which is really the energy in the transverse direction, is conserved. And here, psi is just the angle between the trajectory and the row or plane, and u is the potential. Again, if you consider a row and a plane, there is this minimum distance of approach that the particle would have to this row or plane. And channeling requires that it should be bigger than a critical distance, because if it's closer, the continuum model would break. And you're going to see individual atoms in the row or plane. And psi is defined as the angle far away from the plane. So this would lead into a condition that psi should be less than a critical angle. So again, if you're larger than a critical angle, you're not going to be channeled.
Sorry,
yes?
Your computation is that of a collective effect then? Because you're requiring
exactly. Yes. There's like
minimum armoring.
Exactly. These axial and planar channels can be understood as a superposition of Coulomb shadow cones. So if you have an ion beam coming through at an angle psi, there is a Coulomb shadow right like behind the lattice atom. And if you make the angle smaller, there's going to be a superposition of these Coulomb shadows. And here at zero, they're going to all be superposed. So if you are at psi equals zero, you're not going to have channeling. But also, if you're at psi equals zero and if you're at r equals zero, you're not going to have channeling. So you have to be a little bit farther, at least bigger than at a distance bigger than RC, to have any channeling, and at a psi which is less than psi critical. So the minimum, is the critical distance for the continuum model, or to have channeling, or for the continuum model to hold. So if you're closer, it's going to break. So R min should be bigger than RC, and this RC is in temperature dependence. So here, RC that I put here, RC as a function of E, is just for a static lattice, and it decreases with energy, if you consider temperature effects, and U1 actually is just the one-dimensional vibration amplitude, and it increases with temperature. So this is just an example for U1 in NAI crystal and how it increases with temperature. And this parameter C is found through data and simulations to be a number between 1 and 2. And so this is how the RC, which is temperature dependent, changes. So there is this uncertainty in this parameter C, which would cause an uncertainty in the RC. And yes?
Mm-hmm. So the RC, that would be given by the Debye screening length? Or what's determining RC?
This RC?
Yeah. Well, the RC in the root.
Right, this one that is inside. So this is just if it's closer, then it's just given by the continuum model that if it's closer than a certain, so with the potentials and so on, if it's closer, you're just going to see the continuum model to break. So it's solving these equations with the
Okay, but it's essentially the Debye screening which determines RC, or?
This one doesn't have any temperature in it. So if you're referring, with this other one, which is temperature dependent, yes. But just considering a perfect static lattice, the RCE, which goes in under the square root, is just for a perfect static lattice without any.
So where do you get that number from?
It's just, you mean like, I don't know.
You have no screening at all, you're saying that if you get too close, then you just Coulomb scatter so far.
Right.
You don't repetitively have soft.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
And so that's something which is independent of screening, it sounds like.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. That's, it's
the. Is that. You're asking how far the Coulomb field is being screened out by the microphone. It sounds like it's just a different calculation because you're having a multiple scatter.
Yeah.
So what's the condition? You don't have to write down the whole formula.
Yeah, so you
what's
write
the, what it conceptually, what's the condition that sets RC?
So you have to write the potentials and set it. I have to go back to, this was done like 3 years ago, but I have to go back to the paper. I can tell you exactly like what we did to find it, but it's just these equations we have to use, but with the RC. But we didn't use the screening. But I'll get back to you on that, sorry. So RC, it decreases with energy. So yeah, it is larger as E is smaller, yes. It's the same you said that you said. So the conservation of the transverse energy, basically if you are at, so if you go to a place where which you're far from the row or plane, you could write this, you could say that this is kind of in the middle of the channel because your next row is here, and this is far away. And this is going to be equal to the potential just at right here, because psi is zero there, so it's just u of r min, and that's your minimum r. And from here, basically, because r min is bigger than rc, u of r min should be less than u of rc, because u is a decreasing function of r. And you could find a relationship for the critical angle just from that r min bigger than rc. And this, so RCH again is just the radius of the channel. And if your RC is bigger than the radius of the channel, psi is zero, so no channeling is possible. So this is explained again before, and you could see that here. This is the plots of R critical as a function of energy and psi critical as a function of energy, and as the R decreases to be less than, to be bigger than R channel, psi would just go to zero.
What's U?
U is a potential.
This is like the Coulomb potential.
It's a continuous potential of the whole string and.
So if I did the Coulomb thing, I average it along one direction.
Yeah. Yes. So there isn't any data in NAI, but there are some data in silicon crystals from thermal wave measurements for boron and phosphorus ions. And we tried to fit them with the C equal 2 case, you could see that the fits are not bad. These are for different channels, so these are the critical angles as a function of energy, and the green are the data, and the blacks are the models we use, and the fits, That's for boron, and this is for silicon. So C equal 2 gives the best fits compared to C equal 1 and other values. Yes. Yes. No, no. The green are the data, and the black are the model.
How much do the, if you were to change it, one of them to C equals 1, roughly by how much would that shift the curves?
It's going
to
shift, it depends on the different ones, but I think for example, this one shifts like by 0.5, the first one. So instead of 1.5, it was more around 1 and so on. So it was bad.
Less than order 1, yeah. But yeah. Certainly much bigger than the difference.
Right. Right.
There.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry. What's going to be to the data that's extracted from this?
Yeah. So this is the data that was in this paper, wave measurements.
Does Hubble's paper have error bars, or are they really tiny error
bars? No, they didn't.
Okay.
No. So what we need for this calculation, if you consider the WIMP nucleus elastic collision, so you have a WIMP mass of M, it collides with a nucleus of mass capital M, and the WIMP would scatter, the nucleus would recoil with a momentum Q, and we need to determine the probability that an energy E is measured when the recoil is in the direction Q hat with energy E recoil. So we could write this probability based on the fraction of channeled nuclei, and the first term is because E for channeling is just equal to ER, is just due to channeling, and the second is non-channeling. So we basically have to figure out this channeling fraction. So I'll show you our computations for the incident particles and for recoiling nuclei. So the Dama channeling fraction is calculated as if the ion starts their motion exactly from the middle of the channel. So it doesn't have any of that RC condition, only the psi condition. So the channeling fraction is 1 if psi is less than psi critical, and it's 0 otherwise. And so Dama suggests that 40% of the events at 2 keV are channeled. So that's a, yeah. So we wanted to reproduce that. So we used this Hilpiks pixelization of the sphere. So we just to figure out what these channels are. So this is a sphere of recoil direction. You could just divide it into many, many pixels and figure out what this channeling fraction is at each pixel. And it's just really simple. The chi is 1 if psi is less than the psi critical for each axial channel. So that's different for each. And it's 0 otherwise, and the same for the critical, for the planar channels. So here you can see examples of an axial channel or a planar channel. And then we have to integrate this channeling fractions over direction. So and then this integrals cannot be solved analytically. So again, numerically, we do this with this Hilpiks. And this is what we find. So,
sorry, can
yes.
Why
because. No, Hilpiks is called it's used in WMAP and other programs. It's called the hierarchical equal area latitude pixelization of the sphere. So you just divide the sphere into like 30,000 pixels and figure out what the value of, for example, for our case, this is really useful because we could figure out what the value of channeling fractions is at each different channel or recoil direction. Right, and to do the integral, so we need to integrate these channeling fractions over all the channels, right? And so the way to do that is just over all directions, and the way to do that is just to just add up the values at each point for each. So here it's just 0 or 1, but then it can get.
It's a way of doing numerically.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Numerically doing that.
Yeah. So sorry. So the way we should understand this this sphere, I think you said this. Is that, like, if I were standing in the center of the crystal, I would see that
recoils.
These are the rows, these are the centers of
the rows
mean, the
and planes and
the sort of clear lines of sight out of the
yes.
crystal, right?
Yes.
And this is a cubic lattice. So, what's the axial and the planar?
So these are the 100, 110, 111, and then you have to change it. So we have 1, like in all the directions. So there are 24. The axial ones is just 100, 010, and 001, and then we have the 110 and so on. So exactly for each 100, for example, assume is in the x direction, the plane would be the ZY plane.
So 110 and 111, are those different types of channels? Or is one
yeah, they're different types of channels.
Okay,
so it's just like assuming one is, so 110 is one in the X and one in the Y. So that's the channel, yeah.
And 111 behaves basically the same way as 110?
No, I mean the channeling angles are different.
Okay.
Yeah, the channeling
so
angles
really,
are different.
Really
there are some dominance, and so these are all the cases showing. So some of these are, so you could see that this one is, for example, the 100, and then, you know, assuming this one is 010, and then this one is 001.
But we should read it these are both ends of the same channel somehow, and those are both ends of the same channel, and those are both ends of the same channel?
No. So this goes through the other end of the other end of this goes inside the screen. This one goes all the way towards that there, and this one is towards the south. And this is another channel. This is going like that from the. So this is the 111, I think. Yeah. So after our integration over all angles, so we find that, so this is just what we find when we don't consider dechanneling. So there's this phenomenon called dechanneling. I'm not going to go into it. Yes. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't matter really. Like, you just have a plane and you can, you kind of do a small angle scattering. So this result is without considering dechanneling. So there's dechanneling, which is just, so the ions, after they're channeled, they might get out of the channels because of these thallium dopants that are in the crystal. And so the DAMA did a very, maybe the dechanneling that they considered was too extreme, and we did the same thing to try to reproduce the result. We didn't go much more into that. So the extreme dechanneling is that if an ion is dechanneled, it's not going to be rechanneled again. So if it's going to be out of the channel just by one, the first collision with the thallium, it's going to be dechanneled forever. And we didn't consider it to be rechanneled. So we considered this extreme dechanneling similar way as they did. And these are the curves of that we find, the solid curves. And the dashed curves are the DAMA curves. And so we agree with the DAMA results to a good approximation. Our results is based on analytic calculations, but they're using a Monte Carlo. And other than that, I think most of our assumptions are the same.
But is that one now looking in average over the day because you changed the rotation of the crystal?
No, this is not. This is just the channeling fractions. We're considering isotropic. So when we integrate here, this is just a geometric channeling fraction. So we're not. Yeah, I'm gonna show you that for the daily modulation. Yes, exactly. Yeah, so we reproduce the results with that. So, of course, if you have a direct dark matter detection, that's not actually accurate to start from the middle of the channel because the WIMPs would hit the nucleus would recoil from the lattice site. So it's gonna start from the lattice, not in the middle. Or close to the lattice. And if you have a perfect lattice, no recoil would be channeled. So this is called the rule of reversibility. And it's basically saying that if you have an incident ion hitting a nucleus on the lattice, it's not going to be channeled. And if you reverse the path, the result should be the same. So if you have a nucleus originating from the lattice side, the blocking effect is very important, and you have no channeling. You just get a very large angle scattering because of all these atoms in front. However, we would have channeling because of lattice vibration. So we never have a perfect lattice. These lattice ions would be displaced because of temperature vibration. So they're not going to start from the lattice side. They're going to start a little bit inside a channel. So this temperature effect is very, very important. And it wasn't included in the DAMA calculation and also in the one that I just showed you where we reproduced DAMA. So for a given recoil energy and some initial psi angle, we could write the channeling condition as the following. So it should be less than the U of R critical. And from here, we could find Ri min, or the minimum initial R for the particle to be channeled. And we can actually, the thermal vibrations of the initial position, we could represent it by a Gaussian. And the fraction of channeled nuclei then would be, if we integrate this Gaussian from this minimum initial R that we find from above up to infinity. And of course, this is not going to change that much if this infinity is really in the middle of the channel. And we get an exponential as a result for this channeling fractions. So you can see that the uncertainties we have in the RC, based on those C values, if it would be 1 or 2, enters into Ri min, and then it would be exponentiated here. And so there are two main temperature effects here. The U1 increases with temperature, so the chi increases, and the RC also increases with temperature. So the chi decreases because we have an e to that. And so the two temperature effects would be opposing each other in this case. And so this is the result that we get for different C values. And this is for a NAI crystal at 293 K, which is the operating temperature of DAMA. And for C equal 1 and NA and C equal 2, there are solid lines, and the dashed lines are for I. So instead of 40% at 2 keV, we have 0.4% at 2 keV. So before moving on to different crystals, the consequences of this, the compatibility of the DAMA with other experiments, this is what we had before. And now the two channeling and not channeling regions are just different at 7 sigma and at a very, very low mass part of this. And so we did this for different crystals. And for all of them, the channeling fractions are never larger than a few percent. So this is for an example I just showed for silicon, for the C equal 1 and C equal 2, and for germanium, and for at different temperatures. In reality, the cryogenic detectors operate at millikelvin. So the blue curve shows the millikelvin temperatures here. And we did that for other crystals too. So channeling would be very small.
You just mentioned that the uncertainty is exponentiated because it all depends on this thermal profile of the nucleus. So by how much would you have to be off, say, in the U1 factor as a function of temperature? By what factor would you have to change that to sort of get results that are give order one channeling fractions? I'm just curious.
You mean the C, like how much it should change? Because it's really in that, it's in the RC, right? So this C factor. Well, the C is like it's found for different material to be between 1 and 2. So we don't have that much flexibility. We checked it for the C equals 0, which is just the static lattice, which is not true. And we gave our bounds for those. But the channeling fractions are like, I think if I remember in NAI, there were like 10% or something like that at low energies for C equals 0. So when you have a static lattice, but that's when you don't consider the temperatures. So this is in RC, not in the lattice.
That's the maximum possible, like most optimistic limit.
Yes.
C equals 0, right? Because you're keeping the U1 in the
right.
denominator.
Yeah. And in that case, it maybe is 10%.
Yeah. So daily modulation amplitudes. So earlier, so this goes back to the question that you asked, we were just integrating over all directions to get these. Now we need to convolute with the recoils due to Wimps distribution to find the differential event rate. So this P that is here is just the P I showed you when you have channeling and non-channeling, and comes from the fraction of channeling. And so now we have to just figure out what this differential recoil spectrum is. We can write this as the Radon transform, which is just a linear integral transform of the wind velocity distribution. So this is just the f hat there. And then rho is just the dark matter density, and s is just the form factor, and so on. And for a Maxwellian distribution, and if you have VLAB with respect to the detector, this f hat is an exponential. The important time parts comes into this Q dot VLAB, because Q is usually just measured. So this Q is just the recoil momentum and is measured in the detector reference frame. VLAB is usually given in the respect to the galaxy. And we had to write the transformations from the lab frame to the galactic frame, including the rotation of the Earth, because these transformations usually do not include the rotation of the Earth when they're doing annual modulation and so on, because that's very small. So we had to include it for the daily modulation. So this is showing the WIMPs and the recoils. Whatever I show is all for the standard HALO model. And this is the WIMP number density on the left per solid angle. And the brighter colors, it means a higher fraction. And this is at m equal 30 GeV for E equal 10 keV. Actually, that's E recoil. And so in the direction of minus V lab, we have most of the WIMPs. And this is just F hat, which is in recoil directions for I recoil. So you could see that for this case, it's not that collimated. We have the maximum in the direction of minus V lab. But for the win-win being in the direction of minus V lab, it doesn't mean exactly for the I recoils. The average is in the direction of minus V lab, but you have some dispersion, and you're going to pick many channels. So you're not just going to be in the direction of one channel. So you're going to see many channels in that direction. And if you go to higher masses, you're going to see, this is what we actually noticed, and I'm going to, in a minute, go over this, that the maximum of the recoils are not in the direction of minus V lab, but in a ring around it. So this is one of the directional features that we noticed. So we can define the daily, the relative signal modulation amplitude as this maximum. If you consider a day, we could take the maximum of the rate and the minimum of the rate and compute the difference over the total. And we explored the parameter space for different recoil energies and wind masses. And we found that this AS can be larger than 10% in some cases. And for example, this is for NAI. This is a 10 keV and 10 GeV, the AS is like 12%. So the question is that could these be observed in the DAMA experiment? And so the detectability depends on the exposure of the experiment. So in case of DAMA, we have 1.17 ton year. And we saw that this large daily modulation amplitudes are not observable at 3 sigma or even at 1 sigma. So this is the most favorable case that we found. And with the current total rates of DAMA, because it is dominated by background, we would need 40 times the current exposure of DAMA to detect this case.
Sorry, how do you know that it's dominated by background?
Because it's...
How do you know
what is the background? Well, it tells you that the total rate is 1. Events per kV per kilogram per day, and it is mostly is background. So that's the main the total that they get.
How do you know it's mostly background? I mean, at 2 kV, there's potassium 40 as a background.
And this is given, I think, in their papers that this is just dominated by background. The rate that they give is. For the number of events is dominated by background.
Well, they certainly can't reliably say that it's signal, but I don't know that they can reliably say that it's background either. Okay. I mean, the modulation rate is much lower, but
right.
By about a factor of 100, right, which is not a crazy modulation rate for some folks.
But if you have more background, then the modulation rate.
Yeah.
So, sorry, related question though, when you say it's 10%, is that kind of taking advantage of the denominator being just, I mean, your channeling rate is 10 to the minus 2, 10 to the minus 2.
Right, right.
So you presumably are getting 10% because you're looking at an energy region.
Yeah.
That's dominated by the 10 to the minus 3
channel. Yeah, this is at very low energies, you could see, and this is
10 to the minus 4 of the recoils, but 10% of the channel recoils.
Yeah, it's the 10% of the channel recoils, yeah. I mean, this is also at very low, well, let me think about your question again. Well, this is both considering like channeling and non-channel recoils.
Well, but the denominator is the number of events in a particular energy range, right?
Yeah.
Which is effectively just
Well, if you go at that energy range, it is just selecting the channels.
Do you get?
Yeah.
So the unchanneled events aren't even in there.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. This is mainly due to channeling.
Right.
So.
Yeah, I'm just saying the unchanneled events would be in another energy
range. Right, 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 right. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
How do you arrive at the number that is not observed?
There's a condition that we just say the difference in the number of events should be bigger than 3 sigma And we compute these. So you're saying how we consider that it's observable, the observability condition. Right. So this is yes. So here we're assuming, so these are just rough estimates, right? And we're assuming an energy bin of 1 keV. So it is kind of compatible with the energy resolution of DAMA, but it's not, we're just taking 1 keV energy bins in this case. This is at a particular, This is at a particular time.
Do you actually have a daily modulation result from 10 years ago or something? Yeah, which was, but their one sigma error bar is the same order of magnitude as their current annual modulation.
So if we have smaller background or larger exposure, it's easier to, you know, observe. So some future prospects for other experiments, this is still preliminary, but we were just trying to explore this. And this is not due to channeling. So there can be daily modulation in the usual rate just due to the change in the direction of the velocity of the Earth around its own axis. And so this is looking at different material. And we went to the lower mass region because the cross sections can be much higher there. So here, you know, these MT that we give, it's assuming a cross-section of 10 to the negative 39. So for anything else, we have to consider the cross-section correctly. These are different V-escape values. So this is the standard, old standard value. This is the median of the, this is the kind of new value from the some analysis that is done on stars, the Rave analysis. And then the MT range that we give are for different astrophysical parameters. So the galactic rotation speed has a range. The sigma V, the dispersion, has a range. So considering those. And also, these are all if we have the experiment on the equator. So of course, if we go to some other latitude, these numbers should be divided by cosine squared of the latitude, and it's at a 1 keV energy bin too. So you have to consider. So this is, so roughly we get for future experiments, it's around a 1 tonnier if we assume no background. So that's very important. Of course, if you have background, these are going to be much, much different.
So the only one of those technologies that's successfully done. Sorry, can we go back to the previous slide again? So this is a 10 gev width. Right? Mm-hmm. So in the parameter range where the 2 keV signal could, modulation signal could be explained by the unchanneled sodium reflux, right?
For the 2, yes, the unchanneled.
And then
yeah.
The 6 keV would be the channeled sodium.
Right.
So this is 10%. So this is going back to what I was saying earlier, this is 10% of the channeled sodium recoils.
Right. This is, yeah, considering
which
only.
Which was already greatly suppressed compared to the total scattering rate.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's why the absolute rate is small.
Yeah. Oops, what did I do? Okay. All right.
Did you also look at screens? Because they
no, we were going to. Yeah, this is future work. Yeah, so other, this is all for the standard halo model, but it's very interesting to look at different models. So some directional features. So directional detectors measure the recoil direction. So we have Drift, DMTPC, New Age, and MIMAC. They're using different material. And in the standard halo models, the particles in the dark halo of our galaxy are on average at rest with respect to the galaxy. And the average velocity of those particles with respect to the detector is minus VLAB, because we're moving with velocity VLAB. And so the easiest dark matter signature to detect would be this average recoil direction, which is expected to be in the minus VLAB direction. So an ideal directional detector would provide a 3D reconstruction of the recoil directions, and including their senses. So it would have the tail and head, and has a low energy threshold, and also has a very good background rejection capability. And so for if you consider that, there has been studies that few events in the order of 9-10 events would be enough to reject isotropy. So I will discuss a few other new dark matter signatures which are relevant for the directional detection. One is the ring of maximal recoil rate, which I showed you an example of, and we had seen before, but we had not like looked deeper into the relevance of it. And the other two are some aberration features and the directional annual modulation amplitude in the north and south galactic hemispheres. So for heavy enough WIMPs and low enough recoil energies, so the maximum of the recoil rate is not in the direction of average WIMP arrival direction, but in a ring around it. So here this Q over 2 mu is just the minimum WIMP speed required to have a recoil momentum Q. And just from there, you could see that if VQ is less than VLAP, the maximum of F hat happens some angle, so at minus Q dot VLAP equal VQ. And so if VQ is bigger than VLAP, the maximum of F hat is just in the direction of minus VLAP. So this maximum occurs in a ring of angular aperture gamma around minus VLAP. So there's cosine gamma in the above. This ring is going to be visible when you plot this F hat on a sphere of recoil directions. So these are two examples for different energies. So mass of 100 GeV, and in the first case, the energy is 5 keV, so VQ, or the Vmin that we find is less than VLAP, so there is this ring. We have the direction of minus VLAP. So here we have this is the North Galactic Pole, South Galactic Pole, and the North and South poles of the Earth. And in this other case, we have a 40 keV energy, and so VQ is bigger than VLAP in this case. So you could notice that this first case is in December, and the other one is in June, so minus VLAB is pointing towards the slightly towards the southern hemisphere in December, and slightly towards the northern galactic hemisphere in June. And this is basically the reason. So you could write VLAB as four components. One is the galactic rotation velocity, just the rotation of the galaxy around the center. Then we have the peculiar motion of the sun around the local standard of rest. We have the Earth's revolution around the sun and the Earth's rotation around itself. And so if we want to write this VLAB, the components basically in the ZX plane of the galaxy. So the X just points towards the galactic center, and the Z points towards the galactic north, and the Y is just in the direction of the galactic motion. So there's going to be no VGAL roads in this plane. We only have VSolar, which is a fixed, it doesn't depend on the time of the year. And we have the Earth's revolution, which changes from the northern hemisphere to the southern hemisphere from December to June. And so this is VLAB, which in December is towards the north, and in June is towards the south. So minus VLAB is the opposite. So the maximum possible ring radius, we can find this gamma max if we set this reduced mass to equal. So the reduced mass would be equal to the mass of the detector for when the WIMP mass is much larger than the mass of the detector. So this capital M is the detector mass. And we can find a maximum of this cosine gamma. And so you could see that at low energies, this gamma can reach to 90 degrees. And these energies that I show with vertical lines here is at the right of them, there can be no ring. So just from here, if ER is bigger than 2m VLAP squared, there would be no ring. And so the regions here are to the left and underline these under these curves. And these are for different materials. So we have sulfur, fluor, and carbon. And the 180 and 312 refers just to the range of the galactic rotation speed. So it's very important in this calculation because this VLAB changes by a lot. And this is all done in June. So we plotted, so it's just easier to see it except just, you know, instead of plotting this on a sphere, it's easier to see this if it's plotted on these using these Mollweide equal area projection maps of the celestial sphere. And these are at different energies for sulfur recoils. It's just showing, so these are all the recoil directions and showing F hat again, and for a mass of 300 GeV. So again, here, we for 5 keV and 10 keV, you could clearly see the ring. At 20 keV, it's starting, it still exists, but it's really hard to see. And at 40 keV, there's no ring because VQ is just bigger than VLAB. We could also infer the WIMP mass from the radius of the WIMP, the radius of the ring. And so for a given recoil energy and element in a detector, you could figure out, if you can measure this aperture angle of the ring, you could figure out what the mass is. And when you have a compound like CS2 or CF4, you may have more than one ring, actually. And then this is kind of a way to check consistency, because all of the rings should direct to the same mass. So this is something interesting to look into. So some aberration features. So the motion of the Earth around the Sun causes an annual modulation in both the magnitude and direction of this arrival velocity of the dark matter particles when they come to the Earth. And the change in the magnitude causes this annual modulation in non-directional detectors, which has been extensively studied. But the change of this direction gives us aberration feature. And basically, observing this full aberration from, like, you know, if you go from December to June, would maybe require very large detectors. But we could integrate separately over the two hemispheres, so over the two galactic hemispheres, actually. And we found a new dark matter signature, which we call NGHAM or SGHAM, so the northern or southern galactic hemisphere annual modulations. So, before going into that, I'm just going to show you some of the aberration features. So this is the recoils in CS2 in December. And the cross just shows the direction of minus VLAB and in June. So you can see the difference kind of by eye. And then if you plot the June minus December difference, here the zero is mainly this orange color, and these are all positive, and these are all negative. So whatever we have, mostly in the northern galactic hemisphere, we have a positive difference, and in the southern, we have negative difference. Yeah, so that's a very good question. Yeah, so for this to actually see it, we need to be able to differentiate between the head and tail. So we are just looking at the ones which are not sensitive to the senses, and see if we're going to have the same signal or not. But this is just if you are sensitive to the senses, because you are picking up each direction. Yeah, so you have to know where they are coming. I think they instead. I think only the other three. So DMTPC and Drift. I think they can differentiate between the senses, the head and tail. I think it was MIMAC which couldn't. New Age, I'm not sure of, but do you guys know? Yeah. Okay. So I know three of them, I think, can do it. I think it was MIMAC which can't. This NGHAM and SGHAM, we can just integrate this directional differential rate over direction and do this difference. And we find that both of these north and south galactic hemisphere amplitudes are larger than the total, which is just the sum of the two. And they don't change sign with energy, because the annual modulation changes sign with energy. But the northern one is positive, so similar to what you could see here. And the southern one is negative. So this is an example of this difference. So this is June minus December, so exactly doing this calculation on the y. And you could see that the northern is positive and it's higher. So at some energies, it can, you know, we get the maximum difference here. So for example, here we have zero annual modulation, the total, and then there's this large modulation in the north and the south. So so the NG-ham is positive and the SG-ham is negative. The reason is that the average wind velocity, which is the direction at which most of the recoils happen, points slightly north in June and slightly south in December. And so when you go from June to December, the recoil rate decreases in the north and increases in the south. So that's why we get this effect. And the change in sign that you see for the total is just adding up the two, and they're varying. So the amplitudes are varying, and that's why you get this change in sign. And the most striking difference, as I mentioned, is at some energies at which both of these annual modulations are equal to magnitude, and the total is zero. So a summary. So a channeling of recoiling nuclei and incident particles have different mechanisms. So we reproduce gamma results for incident ions, but that doesn't, it's not what we have for recoiling nuclei, and which is much smaller and strongly temperature dependent because of this blocking effect, which we had to include. The possibility of daily modulation due to channeling, it's a background free signature of dark matter, and but it's going to be very small and are not observable in the DAMA, and we are, you know, it might be detectable in other experiments if they have a smaller background or larger exposure. So some other signatures that I mentioned was the ring of the maximum recoil rate, some aberration features, and this NG-ham and SG-ham. And this ring just exists for heavy enough WIMPs and low enough recoil energies because the minimum velocity should be less than the velocity of the lap, and it can be used to infer the WIMP mass. Both of these northern and southern galactic hemisphere annual modulations are larger than the usual annual modulation. So again, this is all for the standard HALO model. And the NG-ham is positive and the southern one is negative. So these are just some partitions that give us the large amplitudes that we looked at. But there might be other partitions that, you know, might give us higher amplitudes, and especially if, you know, if we go to other HALO models, we could get we might be able to get different results. So this is something for the future that we are considering to do. So that's all. Are there any questions?
We're running a little bit late, so we can take these questions off.
Okay.
All right, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much.